Hey, all. Sorry for the crappy quality of my voice in this episode. I don't know if it was user error or if my recording system messed up, but it recorded through my laptop microphone. Even so, you can still understand everything I'm saying. It's really not that bad, but next time I'll be back where I'm actually coming through my quality podcast mic. Thanks for your understanding, and hope you enjoy.
You have entered the Arcade Cafe. Today I've served myself this beer. It was in this package from Aslan called Parallel Universe, where they collaborated with like three other breweries. So this is called, it's from Aslan and Steel Hall. It's called M Theory, and it's a hazy IPA. I don't really like IPAs that much, but here we are.
I mean, it looks okay.
Ain't bad. I'm your host, Bryce Yoldi, and I'm here with my pal and cousin-in-law and more eloquent co-host, Caleb James.
More eloquent? I don't know about that.
Well, I would say so. Okay. But here in the Arcade Cafe lies a haiku-sized answer to those full-length episodes of the main feature of Arcade Bookshop. And only about 20 to 30 minutes in length, we bring you our current thoughts on our video game progress, progress, a little bit of video game news that's probably already a little old, occasional state of the podcast info, our wants, our needs, our private thoughts, our deepest, darkest secrets, and the sweet nothings Caleb whispers in the bedroom.
Why does it have to be in the bedroom? It makes it perverted.
Where else do you whisper sweet nothings?
I don't know. Movie theater, maybe? I don't know.
I mean, isn't that the same thing?
I guess.
Do you want to get down to business? Oh, no, that wasn't a good follow-up to that.
Wow. You want to get butt naked and wrestle?
Anyway, let's get it on.
Debauchery in the morning.
I mean, I figured we'd start with showing off our contributor copies of Diabolik Press.
Pretty cool.
So, here it is, finally. We don't know yet when they're going to start selling this to the general public, but we've got ours.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah, really. Here we go.
It's pretty cool.
And I'm one of two poets in here, which is pretty neat. It's the the Death Loop. And I read it, and it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's. I read it last night or the night before, and it's gorier than I remember.
Yeah, that really got me.
Yeah, that was kind of visceral, maybe is the word. Yeah, I remember not liking that story, and I remember submitting it to Diabolik because it was a new magazine, and I was like, oh well, it'd probably have a chance going. I don't think I've ever submitted it anywhere. I think it was an old DPW story that I had on the website a long time ago. And then, you know, just took everything off. But I actually finished it. I read this lot yesterday, the whole thing, the whole collection here. And there's some solid stories in here. Everything is really a lot different than I don't know why I wasn't really expecting like generic horror stories. But just from some of the other anthologies I've been in that I've read, I was just kind of thinking, oh, you know, like general horror. But yeah, everything is pretty weird. I mean, Ashley, who's also part of DPW, he has the first story in here, and I can't remember because his is called Pox, Mine and Home. He had a few of these Pox stories on DPW back in the day, so I don't remember if this was a old DPW story or he redid it or anything. I'm not sure, but it's pretty fucking freaky. And then yeah, there's a couple good stories in here. I really like the Girl in El Paso by Casey Rayburn. That was a cool one. Drawing from the Devil's Deck by Sirius. That was an interesting one.
And I'll have to actually go through it because I just did the typical thing where I read my own and then nobody else's. Well, I read yours, but
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out because I was pleasantly surprised. Not that I'm, you know, one of those people who would think, oh, I'm better than everyone and I'm not going to read your stuff. And if I do, I'll think it sucks. But I, because I go more into literary stuff generally, I was happy to see that these are more of a literary slant. They're not just like generic, you know, slashers and things like that. Most of them are like mind fucks, which I appreciate. If not all of them are mind fucks, actually.
That's cool. Well, you said the editor is a poet, right?
Yeah, I actually bought his name's Mitch Green. I bought his poetry collection. What was that called? Hideous Paradise, maybe? I read a couple poems in it, and it was pretty cool. I haven't had time to go through it yet, but it's like horror-esque poetry. Like kind of like darker stuff. I only had one caveat with, I guess, two. I mean, this is it's supposed to be a magazine, so I guess that's why it's on the shorter side. Because I know this guy got a lot more Spencer submitted, and he didn't get in, so I know he had more submissions. But the only real caveat I have is the formatting's not consistent.
Oh, it's
like
not?
every story. Yeah, if you look, every story is formatted differently. Like some of them, like my story is your typical indent, no space after each paragraph. Whereas some of the stories are no indents at the beginning of the sentences and there's spaces after the paragraphs. And then some do both. And then some stories have what used to be what most short story collections did. The first sentence of the story is not indented, then the rest are. I think I saw one story where it's like that, but I don't know. I'm assuming when he went through the edits or whatever he did, he just put the stories formatted how they were submitted. I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it doesn't kill any. It doesn't mess up the content or anything. I just, someone who used to do editing, that's one of the things I noticed.
So reading it, did you find at all that they were more, I mean, you said they're all kind of weird. So do you feel like I'm just flipping through and I'm looking at the ones that don't have indents and they don't have indents and they have like an extra space between paragraphs. So did you feel at all like those ones maybe were more like artsy in any way?
No, I didn't find that the formatting had really anything to do with the stories being told. Like, you know, how poetry could be,
well,
usually is formatted differently. I mean, there is one story in here that breaks down into, I thought it was a play when I first glanced at it, but I think it's supposed to be either like a newspaper or I think it's an interview, like a doctor interviewing a patient. So you have like the name and then, you know, the action or what they're saying, the dialogue. But like I understand that being spaced out, but I think that whole story had spacing after the paragraphs. Again, not a big deal, especially for a first issue. That's, like I said, that was the only caveat I had, and it's not really a major one.
Yeah,
it's kind of too.
That's true. Yeah, but I was gonna say it's kind of weird that people writing fiction have those distinct differences, because I feel like that it's almost standard to, you know, what you do. Like, you know, you indent and you don't have an extra space between paragraphs. It just you identify the paragraph breaks with the indent.
What I'm guessing, see, like this story, which one is this?
It's almost like a journalistic style of writing when you do it the opposite.
Yeah, like Drawing from the Devil's Deck is written in the style that I had, but it has spaces like between the scenes, like you should. But it has a few odd spacing things in here that make it read. That's the one that I think has like the interview and stuff in it. So yeah, that one is formatted specifically for the style, but I think he probably published them as, and maybe because he's a poet, he just assumed, or he just wanted perhaps to publish the stories as they were written, because that's what poets do. Like they want the formatting the way the poem, because that's how you read it. Maybe he assumed the story, because I don't know if he's a fiction writer. I didn't notice that he wrote any. So maybe he went into it thinking, oh, you don't mess with another writer's formatting.
Right.
But, you know, regardless, it is strange how different people's submissions obviously were. Like, I just assumed everyone had the generic, because you submit to a lot of places, it's usually like the standard. Maybe you double space, maybe you don't, right. But that's usually the only difference. But I will say that, like, besides the stories being just cool, I think that, well, maybe like some interviews and stuff would help make this more magazine-like, but I think this still comes across more as like an just a general anthology to me, just because there's not essays or interviews in it. The only thing that really makes it a magazine is the art.
So, I mean, I feel like people toss around magazine, journal, and review meaninglessly.
I think it's the printing now, honestly. I think it's the print options. Magazine print options are this, like, generally this size now. The paper, I don't know if it's cheaper or, I mean, this feels pretty sturdy, like, for, you know, what's considered a magazine. But I think it's just the paper and the gloss cover is different. I think that's just the, like, paperback, hardback, magazine. I think it honestly just comes down to the printing options now. Like, whenever you use Amazon, KDP or something, Lulu, you could use that.
Oh, yeah, the other one I got into, Star 82, they use Lulu.
Mm-hmm. Well, originally, when I was going to do a DPW anthology, I looked at Lulu, and it did have, like, the magazine. It was just an option, and it was generally the cheapest one.
Hmm. Okay.
Well, which also could be why because he just paid for everything for this, so that's probably why it's not even 80 pages.
Yeah.
Right. Just because, you know, he didn't. Well, also, another thing with the formatting, too, like the people's, you know, non-specific formatting, he didn't have, like, guidelines in the submissions. Like, it didn't have.
Oh, that.
He might have had
true.
A word. I don't know if he had a word count or not. I don't remember, but he didn't have, like, hey, make sure it's 12-point font. Make sure it's double spaced or have a header. Or have, you know, just anything. He just, hey, submit. So.
Yeah. Well, if you guys want to keep a lookout whenever it becomes available to the public. It's at Diabolic Press on Instagram, right? That's what it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth getting just for, like, the work inside. Like I said, the content's solid. Like, I enjoyed every piece I read.
The cover almost reminds you of, like, the scary stories.
Yeah.
To tell in the dark thing, you know?
Yeah, pretty I definitely cool. like the art. And if he continues to do these, I would like to submit again. And, yeah. You know, if he does more of these, because I really like the aesthetic. I think it is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's a graphic artist, so I'm sure he focused more on that than, you know, the actual formatting of the thing. But if he does another issue and maybe has essays and interviews and make it more like a magazine, I think that could. Well, I mean, people are already asking just on his Instagram, you know, is this for sale yet? So I could imagine there's definitely a neat, just the aesthetic alone, people are going to want to buy it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because there's cool. So many journals and stuff that we've looked at where it's like, why, like, even like NER, like New England Reviews, like, why are your covers so ugly? You pay for the art and they're always so fucking ugly and generic looking.
Right. Yeah. No one will be buying that one for a while. No, it's weird, though. I just ran across this new journal. Well, it's not new, but I've never heard of it until recently. It's called Doors Ajar, like door. It's door equals jar.
Okay.
Or a jar, but they call it Doors Ajar.
All right. That's a little weird.
But I submitted to it just because I saw it on Instagram. And then I was at Barnes & Noble the other day, and it was on the shelf. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I think they might have come from you. I'm not sure. But this poet girl, they follow Arcade Bookshop on Instagram. So I followed her back, and that's where I saw it, I think. So she got into that, and her poems seemed, you know, if I remember correctly, they seemed equivalent to mine at least. So I was like, oh,
right.
So I sent my stuff there. We'll see what happens. That'd be cool if I got into something that's at Barnes & Noble. That'd be fucking awesome.
I don't know what you have to do to qualify to get into Barnes & Noble, because if you go on, like, for instance, the horoscopes we're in, you could buy them online on Barnes & Noble, but they're not in the store.
Well, I already have one of those. I'm in Last Leaves magazine, and that you can buy it on Barnes & Noble's website, but I haven't seen it in stores. I don't think it is in stores.
Yeah, I just wonder what quantifies, like, is it a sale amount that you get probably, in the store? Or?
I would guess it's a certain print run or something like that.
Maybe, or maybe you just have to submit it. Be like, hey, you want to carry, but it would be a number. Be like, hey, You have to pick up 50 copies of this literary magazine to put on your shelves, and whatever doesn't sell, we'll take back. Like, that's probably why people don't do it.
Yeah, something like that. Well, would you want to, next time, since we're already halfway through here, would you want to read some of your thing, your story next time?
I mean, I could read my story on here, but like I said, that probably would have to come with a trigger warning, because deals with some self-harm that is, not joking. It actually, like, normally I don't write overly graphic stuff, but no, when I was rereading that, I was actually making myself like cringe a little. I was like, ooh, God. Like,
yeah.
It had to hurt. Like, Jesus, what was I thinking? And it's like very, because whatever I was planning on submitting that to originally, whenever I wrote it, I want to say it was maybe the Dark Magazine or something. I don't, like I said, I don't think I actually submitted it because I didn't think I like how it turned out, but it had a word count. So I kind of had to rush, you know, the action of the story. So it didn't go, you know, maybe as long or philosophical as I would want, but definitely the grossness is still there.
It is. It got me for sure. But moving on, since we haven't touched on any game stuff yet, there wasn't like a whole lot of gaming news this week. The biggest thing probably in the last week or so is that they're saying there's rumors that the next console for Nintendo, Nintendo Switch 2 or whatever, is probably pushed off to 2025, which kind of sucks. Because I don't know if you would get that or if you would definitely want a Steam Deck, but it'd be cool if you had something handheld that we could play together, but that's kind of lame. But the only other stuff is more layoffs. I don't know who it is, but there's more layoffs, and it's just sad news that makes it sound like the video game industry isn't doing well. But I don't know. The other side of it is that they're laying off so that they can keep, you know, they can adjust to continue doing well. So selfishly, as gamers, it might be a good thing. But
yeah, I mean, it's just like any other bubble. Once it gets too big, usually you have to cut off some of the fat. Like, you have to get rid of some of the unnecessary amount of, like, you see, you know, with Hollywood, the comic industry, even books, publishing in general. It's like, okay, we're putting out too much content now. People, even if they enjoy it, they can't keep up. So they have to cut back. And usually that's in the way of staff first and foremost, which is because companies are greedy and they want to keep making money and they want to net as much money. So they're like, we don't need these people. And the people that are left behind will work twice as hard. Yay. Poor morale all around.
In good news, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is out this past week, which is pretty cool. I don't really know much about it yet, but I started playing Final Fantasy VII Remake for the first time. And it's pretty cool. I like how they like redid all the same music from the original game. And
so it's like updated graphics and everything.
Yeah, it's a whole new game. And so I've been listening to a podcast. It's called Video Games, a Comedy Show. I don't know if you'll like it. They're really goofy, and it took me a while to actually really get into it, but I like them now. But they've been talking about it for the last like month or so, and like all this Final Fantasy VII stuff leading up to Rebirth, and they've been talking about how it's the remake story is like it follows the same beats as the original game, but they added stuff and took stuff away, and there's like a suggestion of remake being like an alternate timeline or something.
That's kind of cool.
Or like, yeah, it sounds really cool. It sounds like by the time they finish the third one, it sounds like it's going to be this incredibly powerful loop around. So I like my interpretation from what they've talked about is kind of like the end of like the beginning of Final Fantasy Remake is kind of like, it's sort of like if the original Final Fantasy VII ended and then time started over again, and they did the whole thing over again in a slightly different way.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. My only complaint so far is that I feel like the mandatory side quests are kind of boring at times, and I don't fully understand There's a different weapon system that I don't fully understand yet, but overall, it's really fun. I thought I would hate the battle system because I really like turn-based stuff, and it's a nice. I'm behind here, so I'm sure there's been a whole bunch of other new action RPGs that really work well outside of the turn-based system.
What system does it use then?
So it's like it's active, so you're actually like running around. Have you ever seen like Devil May Cry?
Yeah, so you're just going around punching shit.
It's like that, but it's combined with a menu actions. So you can run around and you just like tap square to use your attack, but you can also switch between all your characters and like you can command whoever you want, and you can also choose to use special abilities or spells from your menu for all of your characters. So, and you don't have to, you can just use your sword and only be Cloud, but you can also, you know, actually choose to actively do all those things, all the menu choices. So in a way it still has it's not turn-based, but it still has that like menu selection battle system in a way.
Instead of, you know, what would be a good way to negate all those extra steps?
What?
You know. You know what would speed that along?
Does it have to do with an old game?
It might.
Characters from a game from yesteryear?
Possibly.
Do they use firearms?
Sure do.
Yes. They run into an alien or two.
Doesn't matter what you run into. You're blasting.
Yeah. Fucking Contra.
And that music, too. Replace the Final Fantasy music with Contra music. Just during the fights. Be fucking awesome.
Well, so how is your Sea of Stars progress?
It's getting, I mean, it's fun and I really like the story, but I do feel it's getting kind of repetitive now. Like all the fights and stuff, I just kind of button mash half the time and do spells. And I don't know. It's fun, but I don't know. I want something different to happen now. Like, I don't know. Like, I got to one boss. It was like some fucking leaf monster. And I fucked up because right before you go to the leaf monster, there's a fire pit. And, you know, you could rest. And then that recovers all your health and your mana and stuff. And I was cooking and I saved and I completely forgot to do the rest. So I went into this fight and I was like, shit, my guys are all fucked up. Well, I'll just botch the fight and just load it again. And I just kept hitting the button just so the thing would kill me, and it would never kill me. Like, no matter what, it kept knocking guys out, but then they'd wake up before it killed the other one. I couldn't fucking die. And then I just got mad. I just kept punching it and I won. After like, I don't know how long. It was so irritating because I tried to lose on purpose and I still couldn't lose.
Yeah, that's that tells aspect. You
the difficulty of the game.
That's that aspect of it where it's just a little bit too easy. Like it's nice they didn't make it like menacingly difficult, but it's also like they put kind of too many features in that made it doable.
That was definitely putting like some kid shoes on or kid gloves there because, you know, that was a boss fight too, not a major boss, but it was still a boss fight. And I literally purposely tried to lose, did everything wrong, and just let the thing hit me over and over and kept knocking me out. And I just finally had to beat it because it would not beat me. So like they made it just a little too easy in that regard.
It does get harder though. Pretty soon you're gonna have a little like some tougher fights. Then you do get to a point, I think, pretty soon after where you're at, where shit kind of changes up and it gets more exciting. And you get one more character, I think.
Yeah, they said there's another character coming.
Yeah, so I think it'll... I started feeling kind of the same way. Like, is this just going to be the same shit until the end of the game? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it doesn't, like, totally change up. So it's still, like, the same... It's still the same battling. But it gets a little bit more exciting pretty soon. And I think you'll...
You know what the hardest part of the game is? What? Honestly, at least for me so far, the fucking fishing, like trying to get all the fish
that is hard. Pond, I did it.
Fucking irritating. It is hard. Like, cause you just go back and forth, but it just line keeps breaking. It gets really annoying.
You have to, we'll talk about that more in the actual episode.
Yeah.
But I figured it out. There's a certain way to do it. Oh, the other game that's out that's pretty crazy is Helldivers 2. It's like an online, it looks like it's sci-fi fantasy kind of. It's really weird looking. You fight like big monsters and like crazy shit. But it's multiplayer online, and I kind of want to get it. I don't know if I will, but
get it. Just do it.
My buddies might do it, so if they do, I will, and we'll have something else to talk about. And it's a story too, so I could teach you about it in a future episode. So that'd be cool.
Cool beans.
Yeah, man. So, you all set, Caleb? Ready to go?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, all right. Worthwhile. Well, stay tuned, everybody, for this Monday, March 11th. Brand new episode of Arcade Bookshop. We're covering Mega Man 10, which is a fun, much less serious follow-up to our crossover episode from last week on The Plague by Albert Camus. And you can also keep a lookout on our social media for a couple of new guest interviews coming out next month or so, sporadically. So keep a lookout for that stuff and enjoy. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You've just spent some time in the Arcade Cafe. We hope you enjoyed yourself. I am Bryce Yoli with my pal and cousin-in-law, Halo James. And we will see you next week.